Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Blog Talk Radio, Daytime After Dark. You know, maybe I should call this Daytime After Dark and then quarantine. You know, I thought about that lately because really that's what I'm doing. We ought to be staying in our houses even though I don't know about you, but I hope that, I mean, I know we have to stay safe, and I get it, and I'm glad all governors here in Washington stood up to Trump today, but it's really hard day after day. We've been locked down since February, so it's really hard, but more important news, Scott Boyce, he played, on, let's see, I can't even think today. Another word, wait, yes, another word. Please tell me I'm right. Am I mixing him up? Yes. No, but he was on Murphy Brown, ER, Facts of Life, ER, Law and Order, Reba, Sex in the City, One Life to Live. Oh, and Add the Return, I was right. His father was on Guiding Light. Oh, yeah, that's why I got confused. And he's in one of my favorite movies, Up Close and Personal, and The Good Weapon 3. So, let's welcome on Scott.
Thank you. Hi, everybody.
Scott.
How are you? Thanks for having me on the show.
I almost said you were on Guiding Light. I'm sorry. My head is not connected to my brain these days.
Please, I'm so not offended. No problem. Don't worry. My dad
okay,
was on
it.
Okay,
I'm like, oh. I know your dad was on it. So in my brain, you were on it too. But no, you were on it as the return. And so I'm wondering, I was watching the Facts of Life the other day because I needed something to keep my mind from going too crazy. And you were on there.
Oh, yeah. It was an amazing time.
Yeah, you were. And I think they owe you about 2 pennies now. Because Zadie Peck explained that all to me one time he was on about how you guys get the sex when you guys have it on a show. Or maybe sometimes it's 1 penny, sometimes it's 25 cents, sometimes
a
dollar.
Sometimes it's a lot. Sometimes you laugh. Sometimes you go, come on.
Yeah, sometimes it's a lot, but sometimes it's, you know, a penny or two.
Well, I had a wonderful time in that show. You know how I got that show, right? That was because when I was doing Craig Montgomery and As the World Turns, when my character left the show, unbeknownst to me, the girls on Facts of Life, the entire cast, watched As the World Turns. So when my character left, Nancy McKeon said to the producers, bring me him. And George Clooney had just left, so the next thing I knew, I was on an airplane. And I had an amazing time. And not only was I welcomed onto the show, which was a huge thing and a huge leap to go from daytime to primetime, but I was also welcomed into the McKeon family and by them all. And Nancy's now lost, you know, her dad and then now her brother, Phil, tragically, very young. So, yeah, he was a wonderful guy. So,
I mean, you were so good on that, and you were right. It was this Clooney left was sad. I was heartbroken, but then you came in and was happy. And, yeah, it's weird that Clooney left, you came in. I always think it's funny in a way. I'm like, God, only if he could work with Clooney, but did you guys get work together on ER? Because you were on ER.
I was on ER, but I didn't get to work with George. I got to shoot hoops for about 5 minutes with George, but that was it. But it was a great time. You know, the Warner Brothers lot, there was always lots of shows going on, what they were doing. ER, Murphy Brown was right next door. And I mean, there's just shows everywhere. So wherever you go, they're just people on breaks when they get breaks, you know, up shooting hoops or eating or playing or running around. And it was an amazing day. Time.
Oh, well, see, yeah, I remember you on ER, and you did a great job. I mean, you've been on, okay, I can't say every show, but come on, Law and Order, you skilled me on Law and Order. Thank you very much. And
yeah, well, that, well, recently it's been, I did Chicago PD, where I had a great part, playing a congressman who has a...
Chicago PD.
And then
PD
I did FBI
and
Law and Order SVU again. The Dick Wolf people have been particularly very good to me. Very grateful.
When you were on Chicago PD, I love your character, but I wish you were on there for longer than you were.
Yeah,
I always
rumor,
knew that whenever you were in a
role. It was rumored to be a recurring, and it just didn't happen, but it was an amazing time. It was a great part on a great show. I'm very proud of the work I did on it.
Yeah, I mean, you did amazing on there. I mean, you have been on so many shows, and I mean, and then when you did Up Close and Personal, which is the best movie, you guys, I don't care who says it's not because they need professional help. I've seen that movie way too many times to count. How was working on that?
It was a wonderful experience. They were amazing. John Avnet had to fight for me because during those days, the difference between daytime and primetime was big. The difference between primetime and feature films was like enormous, cavernous, impossible. And so it was very hard for a TV person to get into a feature. John Avnet, the director, fought very hard for me. And he even made me show up the table read and sat me between Redford and Pfeiffer for the table read to make sure that the studio would buy me. It was kind of really amazing. He forced me on them. And then Michelle Pfeiffer changed my experience on the show when I on that film. When I came into our first day of rehearsal with Jimmy Avnet, Robert Redford, Michelle Pfeiffer, and myself, which is I'm already in actor heaven. And then the PAs came in, the ADs came in with some coffee, and they put coffee down for Michelle and coffee down for Robert Redford and coffee down for John Avnet, and they turned and started to walk away. And Michelle goes, "Excuse me." And there was a certain edge in her voice, which is surprising because she doesn't have an edge. And they turned rapidly, worried. "What?" She said, "I believe you forgot coffee from my co-star." And they apologized. And then Redford offered me his coffee. I said, "No, please." And then they were scrambling. And I got my coffee. And she said, "Don't ever do that again," to them. And I got my coffee. I said, "Thank you," and went back to work. When I left that afternoon, my car had been parked at a lot, like a separate studio lot. And you had to take a little tram bus over. And then I get over to the Sony lot, and I'm on the Sony lot now, and I have to go through security, and I have my tiny, it's called a honey wagon. It's like a tiny little dressing room. And when I left that day, my car was now parked in front of a very large trailer that had my name on the door. All because Michelle Pfeiffer said, "I think you forgot coffee from my co-star." So, amazing story. She was wonderful.
I love Michelle Pfeiffer. I adore her. I think she's great. And I think also she cannot put out a bad movie or TV show, and it doesn't help that she's, you know, married to one of the top writers in Hollywood, David. It doesn't. You know, I mean,
she works and has for a long time now, been set for life, but she's working because she wanted to. And she's a wonderful, I mean, she's really, when you look at, you know, same movie star, there are actors and there are movie stars. And you look at her and that's a movie star.
Well, I think, I just think that, you know, you were also in People, but they don't know. Lego Weapon 3 with 1, 2, 3. They could be like Lego Weapon 4, 5, 6, 7. And I still the boss. Danny Glover, Mel Gibson.
Pardon me?
Oh, yeah. I loved you in it. And... well, I love the whole franchise. The franchise could never do wrong in my eyes. I mean, I know it's so many years past And I know the actors get older, but come on, people. You could bring him back right now. That would be
lucky. I was very lucky to be working on the show when I was. I had amazing writers that, you know, both created my character, and then Doug Marlin just took my character to a completely different level and promised me, he actually said to me, if you re-sign, I'll change your character and I'll make sure you get nominated for Best Actor. And I laughed, and he said, I'm not kidding. And then he gave me the most incredible material and turnaround storyline, and I've been such the evil Craig with Betsy, and they turned me into a hero with Sierra. And it was an extraordinary writing and with extraordinary talent. There was an amazing amount of really talented actors on that show. I mean, Larry Brigman and Don Hastings and, you know, Elizabeth Hubbard, and it's endless. There was so much. Marissa Tomei, Meg Ryan, Julianne Moore. I mean, amazing roster. Billy Fichtner, so many actors.
Well, I just think, you know, I love The Landlord. I just love her to death. And, I mean, come on, you worked with some of the leading ladies in daytime. I mean, daytime and primetime. I mean, come on. Before we knew who Meg Ryan really was, you know, you guys were on at the routine together. And
yeah,
then
yes,
she kind of, you know, she kind of got famous, and okay, she got famous a lot, and, you know, mm-hmm. then she made my Sleepless in Seattle. Thank you very much, Meg Ryan.
Yep.
Well,
Julianne Moore has done very well for herself, and Marissa Tomei has done very well for herself, and it's an amazing amount of, and there are the actors that stayed, who made it there, you know, Martha McMahon, Martha Byrne, as well as audience knows her, but incredible. She, Mike, you know, Michael Park would still be on the show. An extraordinary talent. So, you know, it's not about whether or not you did other stuff. It's, there were some amazing people, and I was very blessed to work with all of them.
Well, yes. And, I mean, I just think, you know, people forget that some of the great actresses and actors from the soaps who are now in movies, you know, people forget, you know, they were in on the soaps at one time. I mean, Brad Pitt was, you know, a lot of them, and people sometimes forget that. And, you know, daytime, I think, is the hardest working industry because you guys are doing 5 days a week. And, I mean, you were doing 5 days a week 2 months ago. And, you know, you guys really don't get a lot of breaks. I mean, you get breaks, but you don't get as many as, like, if you go do a movie or a primetime TV show.
I remember an actor coming to me. He I won't use his name, but he had only been a movie star before. He'd only been films. And he came over to me at rehearsal. We were doing some scenes, and he was waiting for his turn. He was having a cup of coffee, and I finished up, and I sat down at the table, and he walked over to me, and he had the script in his hand for that day's episode. And he looked at me and he said, how much of this are we doing today? And I said, we're doing all of it. And, you know, it was a moment of terror for him. He had a very, very hard time because in movies, you might do 2 minutes a day. That might take you 12 hours to get that done. And in daytime, you're moving at a ridiculous rate of speed. It's ridiculous how fast you have to go.
Well, I just think you're right about it. And before I left the co-host on, because I've been, they tell me I kind of hug the guests. This is my soul, my Maggie so. But I want to know what your experience was on Diagnosis Murder. And, what was your experience on that? Because a lot of the sub people have been on Diagnosis Murder.
Well, like any show that has a really long life, like Law and Order or Diagnosis Murder, remember Matlock, you know, everybody was on that show.
Yeah, you were on there too.
Another, you know, you've got like they run out of actors. But I had a time on that. Dick Van Dyke is a wonderful, wonderful guy. His son Barry was a delight to work with. Alec Carrault was like my co-star on it. She was amazing. And we elevated the episode, actually. It was probably one of their best, they said. I had a great time working with Dick Van Dyke. He's funny and charming and incredibly smart. And I had a blast. He reminded me a little bit of my dad, which made it even more fun to work with him.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, Matlock and Diagnosis Murder were like the must-see, you know, shows back then because everyone always wanted to, you know, be on there. And before I read, you know, everyone else on, do you miss doing the subs? Because when you were on as the Raccoons, as Craig Montgomery, the scary Craig Montgomery, may I remind you, because you scared me sometimes. Because, you know,
yeah,
you were kind of...
I was not kind of, I was really evil.
I mean,
hey,
okay,
let's face
you were
it,
not
I faked
evil.
My own relatives. I burned down a home for runaway children to make a profit. I mean, this is not a nice guy. And I bankrupted my fiance, and it was horrible. Horrible. And then I wound up going to jail, and then they transitioned it. So I had a really clean arc with them.
So were you happy with the fact that you were on there so many times? I mean, you were on and off of As the Raccoons, you know, and your last real As the Raccoons was 2008.
I was extraordinarily.
I'm sorry, I got mad when they recasted you. I'm sorry, I'm still mad about that.
They waited until I got a TV series. And when Popular ran and got picked up for a full season, they recast the part. And prior to that,
okay,
I got to say, Procter & Gamble and CBS were so incredibly good for me and that show that they let me almost come and go. I mean, no actors get to do that. And I would, like, sign 3-year contracts and leave after, like, a year and a month, and they let me. And then I'd be gone for, like, 11, 12 months, and then they come back. I did that several times. It was a different day then. It was a different budget. It was a different show. There was a lot more money. When I came back in 2008, I was shocked at what had happened to the industry because of budget cuts, because of reality. I mean, we went from – I remember when I left As the World Turns, they were starting to panic because we'd gotten down to 8 million viewers. They were panicking. This is a disaster. And now 8 million viewers is a hit primetime show. But back then it wasn't. And by the time I went back on As the World Turns, they had like a million. And it wasn't fun. It was not. I had a very not a good experience the last time I went back. Not because of the people of the cast. They were great. But it was just tough because I remember what the show used to be.
Well,
so it was a tough
yeah,
one.
And I also enjoyed you on One Life to Live. I think your character on One Life to Live also
Dr.
was really Drugs, good, too.
The psychiatrist. I had a really good time on that show. Yeah, I worked with Michael Easton when I started, and then they moved me over to the other story. And I was working with Bree, who was schizophrenic and multiple personality, and I was her doctor for a while. I had a great time on that show. They were great.
I mean,
I've worked all along. I don't care what it is. It's like people say, well, you went back to daytime. I'm like, no, I took another job, and then I had a primetime job, and I got a movie. Then I did a play in Nantucket. Then I came back and did, you know what I mean? For me, it's like grew up in show business in multiple generations. So a job is a job is a job.
Well, yeah, and if you think about it, people, he has been, when you've done characters on sitcom and in daytime, like you were a doctor on One Life to Live and a doctor on Diagnosis Murder and a doctor on Golden Girls. So...
That's true.
So
that's
my
true.
Question is, before I let my co-host on, has people ever asked you doctor advice because of the fact that you played the doctors on so many different shows?
No, because then I would have been able to do the famous line from the commercial, which is, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV. But no one has ever asked me for medical advice. Thank God.
I think it'd be would be so cool if someone did. And then you would have to scramble and think about something. I mean, you know, after all the ER, Chicago Med, ER, Grey's Anatomy I've seen, I should be a doctor because I know all the lingo now. And I could come up with someone having a disease. But no,
Let me just say right now, praise to our doctors and our nurses and our medical staff.
Exactly.
And to your grocery clerk and
exactly.
to the guy who's sweeping the floor. And because suddenly, you know, things are different. And people matter now. And science matters. And truth matters. And little people aren't little people. They're heroes. And they matter. And I hope we don't forget that. Yeah, I hope we don't forget.
Yeah. They do, and I mean, it's a scary time, and before I let everyone else on, how has Ben staying at home for you, Ben? Is it okay? Are you bored yet, or are you okay?
Well, look, I'm very blessed. We have a beautiful home. I mean, I feel worse for my 13-year-old star athlete son. He got on a national AAU touring basketball team as a shooting guard called High Rise. And they were scheduled to go on tour. We were going to be like literally Philadelphia, Atlantic City, Boston, Providence, Springfield, all over the East Coast. And then hopefully if they did well, it would continue. And that got us put on hold. So they're doing, you know, Zoom classes and they're practicing. And then I think for a 13-year-old boy to be stuck at home with his parents, it's pretty, I can't imagine what that would have been like when I was 13, when everything takes forever anyway. And now we're going into probably 2 months here. He's on school remotely. My wife is teaching some kids from home, and I'm doing editing projects and prepping a script that I want to shoot in December. It's being produced by Krista Morris, and hopefully we can get that going very soon, so I'm prepping that. So I have enormous blessings. I live in a beautiful home with a beautiful view, and we have friends who, like, have three kids in a two-bedroom apartment in Queens. Like, oh my God, you know, and so there's like, you know, they're single mothers right now who, how do they take care of everything and all the kids, and there's no money coming in, and you know, so I pray for those people. I can't complain. We are so fortunate. So it's okay.
Exactly.
We're okay.
Exactly, and it's just a scary time, and people need to stay home and listen to the scientists. And
yes, the longer we stay home, the quicker we'll all be outside. It's hard to remember that. And this may come in waves. It happened, you know, it's happened before. This isn't some diabolical conspiracy thing. In 1918 was the Spanish influenza, and because there was less communication, because there wasn't TV, because there wasn't doctors who knew stuff, there were tens of millions of people died worldwide. And 600,000 died in Manhattan alone. It was horrible. And so they went through very similar things, and they had a big parade a little bit too early. And like 2 weeks later, 700 people were dead. So you go, we can't go too early. I hope we're very careful. And it's going to be a long process, but we have been here before, and this too shall pass.
Exactly. And I'm going to let David on first. Because I'm being nice today, and that's really being nice. Hey, David.
Hi, Scott. How you doing?
Hi, David. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's it's trying to be safe down here in Florida. You know, I'm being bored, but I'm doing all right. So,
is it warm down there yet?
Oh, yes. It was raining yesterday, and it's been on rain this weekend. A little cold. But,
yeah.
So stay home, watch TV, watch soaps. So.
Yeah, well, it was 34 degrees here this morning, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Okay, do you have a favorite memory of your father? Do you have a favorite memory of your father?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question. Forgive me. What is
do, you have a favorite, do you have a favorite memory of your father? A favorite memory
or favorite project, right, David?
No, do you have a memory of your father?
Oh,
memories of your dad.
Oh, my gosh. You know, yeah, my dad and I did, and thank you for asking about it, David. My dad and I did plays together, and we got to do a two-man show called Mass Appeal, about a younger priest being mentored by an older priest who's having his own religious terror. And that was an amazing time to be able to be on stage with my father and work with him. And then I had the flip side of it when I was doing, we were doing on Golden Pond, and both my parents are now gone, but I looked through the wings. I was the boyfriend in on Golden Pond, and my wife, Jody Stevens, was playing the daughter, and my mother was playing her mother. So I got to look off from the wings onto the stage and watch my wife do a play with my mother where my mother was her mother. It was beautiful. And that's a favorite moment.
Oh. You also, Murphy Brown. It was like working on Murphy Brown.
It was great. I mean, it was, you know, it's a very, very funny show. Candace was a delight to me and lovely and wonderful. She's such a class act. And Faith Ford is one of the funniest people alive, and, you know, she was amazing in the show. It was a great recurring role, you know, so it was, again, I wasn't there all the time, but we had an amazing wedding and then a couple few episodes after that, and then a very painful divorce, but it was also funny. And so, you know, the writing was terrific, and again, the network was great. So, I look back at my career, I'm so incredibly lucky and so blessed. I have had such an amazing time. I've met unbelievably cool people, and I've been able to make a living doing that, which I love. So it's, you know, are there bad memories? Like, there really aren't. I mean, of the people I haven't liked or had a problem with, I can count on less than one hand. And, you know, who knows what that's about. So I've been very, very fortunate.
How's Finn Carter doing? How's she doing?
I don't know. I haven't spoken to Finn in a while, so I hope she's doing great. I adore her. She's a wonderful woman.
Yeah, great. Okay, my last question is going to Judge Amy. How are we doing that, Judge Amy?
Well, the best part about it is that she and I actually know each other because our parents were very good friends. And so her mother was actually a judge, and it's her mother's show. That's who it was about. And her father was an amazing guy, and we would be at their home often, particularly around the holidays. So it was a wonderful moment when it was like we finished the show. I'm in Los Angeles. We finished the last scene. She was done with her close-up. We were done with a wrap, and she just walked over to me and kissed me and said, "We'll see you at Christmas," and, like, left. And no, everybody's staring at me like, what? And yes, it was too complicated to get into it. I was like, oh, yeah, never mind. But yeah, she was great. And again, a wonderful woman and family friends. And so we got to laugh about it that Christmas.
Well, yeah. Well, thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it. You always welcome back.
Thank you so much, Dave. Thank you, sir. It was a pleasure to be here and an honor to be here. Thanks so much to both of you.
Yeah.
Okay, David, I'm going to put Bobby on.
Hey,
Scott,
Bobby. How are you doing tonight? Hey,
hi, how
Charlie.
Are you?
Hey, Scott. I'm doing fine.
Hi.
You got to be the luckiest man to work with Meg Ryan before she became a big star.
Yeah, well, we were kids. I was like 22 maybe. She was probably 19, and we were working, talk about ridiculous hours. I mean, we were thrown into the fire pit. We were doing incredibly ridiculous hours. Like, I would work from 7 in the morning till 10:30 at night, four times a week. And then, you know, other days being like 6-7 hours. We were doing incredible amounts. So in a way, I kind of learned how to do this business with her. And, yeah, always grateful for those years long ago. I haven't spoken to her in a very long time.
And you worked with Julianne Moore, who is a North Carolina native, because I think she's from North Carolina. I'm thinking she's from right here where I am in North Carolina. But
where are you?
But I'm in Fayetteville, and I'm thinking she's from Yeah. Anyways, but
yeah, my brother lives in Wilmington now.
Oh, really?
And Matlock was shot in Wilmington.
Yeah. You got a chance to work with Andy Griffin on that show. And what
yes,
was it
I
like
did.
To work with him? Because he was a longtime North Carolina favorite from many viewers who remember him from the Andy Griffin show growing up and Matlock.
Again, he was incredibly kind and nice and respectful to me. Very supportive. You know, I walk on set and it's like, what can you do? You're like, I'm standing at, I've worked with such icons. And I'm glad I grew up in the business, so I was enamored of them, but not overwhelmed by it. So it'd be kind of like I'm standing on set with actual Andy Griffith. This is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Or, oh my God, I'm between Michelle Pfeiffer and Robert Redford. How does that happen? So, but every one of those encounters, I can tell you that people have been great.
Right.
Andy was great
right.
to me and very nice.
Right. Now I know that some of us that are now GH viewers saw Mara's one-woman show from back in January of 2018. And I want to tell you, she was pretty good as Carly. I'm not taking anything away from anybody else on the show, even Katie, who came on later to play opposite Craig when she came over from All My Children. But Mara West was probably one of the best actresses around. I mean, I have nothing against her right now because she definitely knows what she's doing, even though I'm not a big fan of her current character and didn't tend to bother watching today's rerun of General Hospital because I just didn't want to just end up cringing over the fact that I hated Ava all these years and now we're just starting to redeem her because of what happened recently.
Well, I mean, indeed, that's what they did with my character, Craig Montgomery. That's what Doug Marlin did. They took a character that was so vile, and he redeemed them. And it took a long time. It took like a year to really do it, and then he did it. And literally, I was nominated for Best Actor 2 years in a row. When I went back on the show, the character had turned so vile again. It was hard to play him because it was just a mustache-twirling evil. But if you're talking about Mara West, is that who you mean, the actress?
Yeah.
She's
now
I think she's
Ava on General Hospital. And
I don't
and,
watch the show.
She won an Emmy
for
her character a few years back.
Yeah, well, she's pretty amazing talent.
Because I remember Mara winning an Emmy, her last Emmy with As the World Turns, and I remember her winning a couple of years ago an actress an Emmy for what she done on General Hospital. And speaking of great actresses, did you ever get a chance to work with Katie McClain, or was she still on All My Children at the time you came back? Because I think when you came back shortly, I think her character Dixie was being killed off and wasn't resurrected until the online version. So I didn't know if you and Katie crossed paths back when you was
not really
the
not
turns.
Then no I mean only on the As the World Turns did I work with her briefly when we were in the what they called the quad from hell, and that was when it was Roger Hoath and Marie Wilson and her, and and it was a very very tough storyline that made no sense to me, but we played it to the best we could. And then I left the show. I mean, they asked me to leave. I mean, the executive producer and I were not getting along. And he showed me the door, so I left.
It seemed funny that you work with an actress named Meg Ryan, yet you work with Marie Wilson, who played Meg Ryan. I found that kind
of funny. That's funny. I thought of that.
But it's great to have you on, and I'll just let Carly get back to calling you or bring on Maggie or any other callers right now.
All right. Well, nice to talk to you, sir. Have a great one.
Okay. You have a good night, too.
All right. Stay safe.
Okay. Are you, Bobby, is there anything else?
No. I just will let you put on Maggie or some more callers, and we'll get back to talking a little bit later.
Okay, I will put on Maggie now.
Yeah.
Okay. I will be making.
Hello.
Hi, hey, Scott. Maggie. Welcome back. Hi, Carly. Welcome back, Scott.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Hi. Yeah. We, you
Where
know,
are you
I love
from?
You. Chicago.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. Chicago. I love Chicago. I Chicago PD was a great time, but I love that city. And my wife lived in that city for a time as a kid growing up.
She
yeah,
was.
Chicago's great. Yeah. Chicago's great. And then I loved it when I was there. It's a great city to walk in. It's like it's like New York, except kind. it's like a step slower, you know?
And
yes. The Midwest sensibility is beautiful. I love Chicago.
That's okay. My mom would send my dad or myself to the store, and we take forever to get back. And she says, I know those two. They're talking to everybody they meet.
Yeah.
And we were. I know. I was doing it once.
You stand 6 feet apart, that's all.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, not all because pandemic, you're holed up in your, well, I'm holed up at home because of, you know, got health problems with the MS and that.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
Thank you, but they said, can't go out. I thought, okay, fine. It's okay with me. I love it at home, but get a little claustrophobic after a while.
Isn't it funny? Like, we all think, like, what would I want to do? Like, just be home. Now we're like, I can't wait to get out of here.
And we need my soaps back. I need you back on TV, even though I really didn't like you all the time.
Thank you.
You really were evil.
Yeah, I was evil. I was a fun evil, though.
Yes,
I never
I love evil.
My father said to me, when he was an actor, and he said, I said, I was about to play a villain. He goes, you know the secret to a villain, right? And I said, no. He goes, they don't know they're villains.
Mm.
And I went, oh, wow, of course. And then he said, you know, nobody does anything wrong. They convince themselves they're right first. And I went, that's amazing. And so I played it that way, and it kept it human. And that's why I think the character was so fascinating to people, because they would be so frustrated and crazed, and yet rude for me at the same time. It was very odd, you know?
It was. I loved both ways, but really, to me, it's harder to play evil. I don't ask, but I would think it would be harder when it's not your character. I mean, yourself. Harder to
I don't know. It depends. I think it depends on the script. The better the script, the easier it is, whatever the part is, you know? I think it's when scripts are hard, it's hard. Evil can be fun. Evil can also be monotonous, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to get the girl in. Although when you're evil, you usually have the girl in the middle. They're both fun. They both have their problems. They both have their advantages. In some ways, it's easier to act evil if you need to, because really, what do you have to do? I have to look at the camera and do nothing. I have to look off the camera and do nothing. Why? The camera's going in for a close-up and the music's going to swell. Dun, dun, dun. I don't have to do anything. When I'm like the hero, I have to prove myself. So, I don't know. It's you know what I mean? It's funny.
It's funny how they wrote you. You were naughty once, and then they brought you back. You were sweeter, and then you got naughty again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Kind of like real life.
Yeah, real life. Well, that's like Marla, who plays Ava now on General Hospital. And I want to strangle her, but I really like the person. And I go, well, she's really the person inside that person, so she's doing her job.
Yeah.
Ava.
Exactly.
Yeah, Mara
right.
West. Yeah. I hope they redeem her. I do. I hope they
depends on the writing.
Carly.
If the writing's good or not, you know. It's like that's why I can praise Doug Marlin. He understood romance. He understood the history of the show. He never denied the history of the show. And, you know, when I went back on As the World Turns, I mean, I don't think I had like one scene with Elizabeth Hubbard, and there's Craig and Lucinda. You're going to abandon that? And then I had one scene that I was in with my sister, played by Terry Keane, but I never spoke to her. And I thought, that's not good writing.
I remember that, no.
Yeah, right? It was weird.
Yeah.
Said, why aren't they doing that? Why aren't they, you know, what's history? And history doesn't matter. And when they would like change history, I'd say, you know,
thank you.
You think your audience doesn't remember. Your audience remembers the show better than you do.
It's
and you
funny.
Have to honor that and respect that. And they didn't. And I think it helped kill the show.
Well, I don't know if you know where I like to live. They had a Vicky character, Ben, say that she killed her father. And my cousins were going, Daddy says, no, Dorian did it. She smothered her with a pillow. And they go, okay, Margie, if you say so, it's true. I was there. I was there. I'm a witness. My older cousin would go, leave her alone. And Lou says, no, she's usually right on this stuff.
How's the air in Chicago, by the way? I heard that the lakes are clean. Like you can see shipwrecks and stuff.
Yes, you can. Yeah.
Wow.
But
think about that.
It snowed today. It snowed today.
Oh. Well, that's Chicago, right? You know what Mark Twain said about New England weather?
Mm-mm.
He said, if you don't like our New England weather, then wait a minute.
That's here.
It's true. I mean, it could be like 70 degrees and then snowing. And then it's snowing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, may spring come to Chicago soon.
Sometime. Well, St. Peter's Parade had to be canceled, so that hurt my feelings, but that's okay. Then Penn the River's green, and I love it.
Well, it's St. Patty's Day, right? They yeah, I loved it, too. It didn't even happen this year, did it? Yeah.
I said, well, they closed Vegas.
Yeah, look, my son, you know, think about how many graduations are canceled. People at college canceled, weddings canceled. How many people can't get to funerals, can't get to, you know, it's like, So hopefully this will wind up bringing us together closer because we need it. We need to unify, and we have a common enemy that's around the world. It doesn't matter if you're rich or poor or black or white or red or blue. You know, we got to, like, come together and get rid of this thing.
Yeah.
So
well, all humans are in it.
That's right. The whole world's in it.
Yeah.
And we got to think about that, too. You know, I mean, there's tough questions out there, like, somebody mentioned she's a vegan, and she posted, and I'm not. I mean, I love my steak, and I love my meat. She posted, you realize if we didn't eat animals, a lot of this would go away. And I thought about that, you know, and she's got a point. You know, like we spend more than half of our agriculture in this country goes to feed livestock that we're going to eat later. It's like crazy.
It's
crazy. You know, I think my grandfather probably had steak once. I probably had steak three times a week or something, beef. My grandfather probably had that like once a month, if he was lucky, you know?
You're lucky.
Right.
I've always been a big vegetable person, and they're saying all the crops that they're throwing away because nobody can harvest them. And I'm going, these food banks need them. Wrap them up and send them to the food banks. You know?
Well, the poor, I don't understand that. I'm watching milk get poured down the drain. I'm like, just send it away.
Thank you.
Exactly the same thing. There's hungry people. Why are we throwing away food? It doesn't make any sense. So there's a lot of things that we have to look at like that, you know? It's like you think about health care. People were opposed to illegal immigrants getting free health care. Well, what do you think now? Do you want everybody thinking, I want that? Yeah, find out who's sick. Find out right now. Take care of that person.
It's really the way to combat it. Yeah.
You know?
If you don't, if they test everybody, then you'll know because.
Yep. Well, we're going to get a test. It's going to be a while.
Listen to the scientists. If they start opening everything up and it's still out there,
we're going to be right back to where we are, and then we're going to have wasted all this time sitting here in this house.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do that.
Neither.
So, I'd rather stay another month than have to go back 2 months from now and stay another three. You know?
My son works nights. He works nights. He delivers medicine to different places. That's his job. And everywhere he goes, he says to take my temperature and to get a picture to check and everything. And he wears his gloves. And I go, he said, I don't want to get that word mask to her, right? But he says he likes to smile at people, and he can't smile under a mask.
I like there's somebody, my friend Lucy Arnaz, Lucille Ball's daughter, and she sent me a picture. Somebody made her a mask. She asked for a mask that would look like the rest of her face. So somebody did that. They put a photograph of her smile on a surgical mask.
Really?
So there's a picture of her wearing it. It's really funny.
I can see that.
I can see that, right? So I'm thinking we should like go to Kinko's with our surgical mask. Here,
there
you go. Just my mouth, you know? Yeah,
because then you're a real person behind it.
Well, that's what doctors are doing, because they're all, the doctors and nurses are so covered up with everything. They're putting photographs of themselves without anything on with a smile and putting it on their chest so that the patient can look and see what the person looks like, because all they see are eyeballs. So, you know.
Carly's grandma was just in the hospital. I was talking to her, and she said, everybody, you didn't know if they were male, female, what, because they're all wearing the same thing. And
she
was in there for a different condition, but everybody had to be dressed that way. And it's for your safety. That's the reason why, because they didn't want you to get it, God bless, but nobody could visit her.
It was crazy having her in the hospital. It was so crazy because none of us could go visit her. And one night we get a call. She took a turn for the worst. Something about her oxygen, right, Maggie?
Oxygen level.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she took a really good turn. And, you know, she was in the hospital for four or five days. And so none of us grandkids could go see her. And then my sister called everyone in tears, basically telling us we need to call her and say, I love you, probably for the last time. And I'm like, why can't we just go see her? And my sister's like, well, you have a bad immune system, number one, and you're not a doctor. My sister's a PA, so she could go. And, but thank goodness she just rallied, got better, and she's at home and resting. And I hope she's listening to the doctor. I really hope she's listening to the doctor. She's very stubborn. Her mother was such a big fan of Add the Returns and Guiding Light. She used to tell me about Guiding Light being on the radio. My grandma did. I'm like, radio.
She was on the radio. She's the only original character.
I go, if you have a love scene on the radio, how can you see it? And Grandma goes, back in those days, I'm sure there was a lot of those things going on back in that day. And like,
also, guess what city that started in, Guiding Light? Guess what city that started in?
Well, I didn't know that.
Then it
on the radio
New York.
Was such a big concept for me. I'm like, on the radio? Okay, you can see the person. Okay, but, you know, it's crazy. And we want you back on daytime. We don't care. How do you get back on daytime? If you need us to go to dates, Young and Restless, Boredom Beautiful, General Hospital, we have power. We have our own radio show. So people do listen to us sometimes.
I live on the East Coast. All the soaps are now on the West Coast.
That's the hard thing.
I'm not sure. Oh. My son's doing great in his school. He's like he's a scholar athlete, and I don't want to mess with that.
He's doing great,
you know.
I'm the sports nut around here. Don't mess with that.
He's a starting shooting guard on a National Elite AAU team, so that's exciting.
Ooh.
And he can score. I've seen him score 36 points in a game, and he's 13 years old.
Oh, God bless.
Unbelievable. He came with the sports package download because my wife is an actress. We have no idea what we're talking about. So I'm now in this like whole sports world I never knew about. And
isn't it wonderful?
Tournaments. Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. And the time I'm spending with my son that so many parents don't get, and to watch him and support him. And sometimes it's a pain in the ass, but these are fleeting moments, and he will be, you know, he'll be in college shortly, and then boom, gone, you know?
Exactly.
So,
do it
so
right,
I cherish every moment I can. Yep.
Yes. You're doing the right thing. Stay right there. Maybe they can find something out there for you.
Yeah.
East Coast. But no,
yep.
That's wonderful. God bless them, because I'm,
yep.
Well, they know I'm a sportsaholic over here. Yeah. I shoot 13 points. Oh, my God. Yeah.
No, he's
young
amazing.
Man.
My proudest moment of him, and it was after, like, scoring so many points, and they wound up, I don't know, it was towards the end of the season, they wound up playing a team that they completely outclassed. They were in the wrong division.
Oh.
And so this team was terrible compared to them. And I watched this moment. They were up by, like, it was like 48 points in the first. You know, it's
in
getting
the
awful. They're going to turn the, yeah, they're going to turn the clock off because it's like, you know, turn the scoreboard off. It's brutal.
It's
and
brutal.
There's a moment on the court, and this little kid's got the ball, he's coming down court, and I could see my son, I watched him, where he
mm-hmm.
could steal the ball right now. I could
uh-huh.
take this ball right now and go in for a layup or an easy two. And I
uh-huh.
watch him decide to let the kid go.
Thank God.
And there's just this little smirk on his face. And I got to tell you, I was prouder of that moment than like a half-court three. You know,
I've, oh
because
God,
it
yeah.
showed character and it showed class and it showed compassion, you know, and, you know, so much of this stuff where I think you can't teach. And that's great. When you can see.
Great parenting. That's how I got it.
No,
the other way. Sure. Yes.
She's does an amazing job, too. I'll tell you. She's
she has amazing parenting. That's all. Because you can't, you would still be at home, you know, God bless, yes, anyway. Because there's so many that need that, and their parents, like, they're like an afterthought, you know.
Well, I remember when, you know, with money, we're pretty tough with him. And, you know, I remember I got to say this to him with my father. I walked into my father, I was probably like 15, 16, and with my high school sweetheart. And I go, hey, Dad, can I borrow $20? And he turns and looks at me. He goes, $10? What the heck do you need $5 for?
That sounds very familiar. You already got
like,
your $5 allowance this week.
That's how I was raised.
I got $5 a week allowance. My father says, you don't need that money to go to the store. You got your $5. I said, huh? I need more.
I thought that was my allowance, exactly. That's all you're allowed to get.
That was right. My limit was $5. Excuse me. The cough, it won't go away.
Yeah, well, if the cough still won't ever end for you.
I don't think so. I got to charge it rent.
You don't smoke, do you?
My sleeve is tired of it.
Well, I quit. I smoked for 26 years. I smoked a pack and a half for 26 years, and I quit.
Mm-hmm.
And that was years ago. That was years and years and years ago. I quit years ago.
You quit?
Like 20, over 20 years ago.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Just you made up your mind?
No, I just, you know what it was? It was when the CEOs all flew into Washington when their private jets and took private limousines to the Senate, and then they testified with their arms raised over Bibles that cigarette smoking was not addictive. And I remember picking up my cigarette pack and throwing it at the TV screen. I was so mad. And I screamed at them. I was like, you're just a bunch of pushers.
And yeah, they are.
And they are. And I realized it's my money that's helping buy that private jet. And I'm not going to give them a dime anymore. So then I quit by what's called the Nazi method, which is I turned into a Nazi for probably, I don't
yeah.
know, 3-4 yeah. weeks. I was a bad man. And then,
me too.
And then I got to tell you, it's settled. Then it settles. And then slowly it goes away. And now I can't stand the smell of it. I can't stand any of it.
Mm.
It's interesting. So I'm on, you know, far on the other side, but it took a year before I would like, before the smell used to be almost seductive. And then a year later it turned vile. And I thought, oh, isn't that interesting?
Mm.
So now I can't stand it. Yeah. We're in a small treehouse, yep. Thank God.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was doing Chanix, and I was doing great. The doctors were proud of me. I was proud of myself. And then I was very suicidal thoughts and actions. And
then you have to stop, and you have to, that's a danger, danger, danger. And I will also tell you the whole idea of Chantix is, or what any of those, whatever it is, the product, the nicotine products, is to me it seems so odd as a recovering alcoholic now with 28 years plus of sobriety. I can tell you, if somebody told me, well, we're going to give you alcohol, we're just going to give it to you in a pill form, and that way you won't be drinking.
Okay.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
I neither.
I'm still getting alcohol. So I look at those programs and I think, you're just, because my mother-in-law would do this. She would take the patch and then she'd go out and smoke cigarettes. So she's getting like three times the nicotine, right? And then you go, what are you doing? So to me, it was about quitting, and it was about, I mean, and I don't want to get too whatever, but I have a relationship to a higher power that helped me as well. And that I can pray to, and I did pray to, and the answer came. And I've been very blessed. I haven't had a desire to drink since. And, you know, I attended meetings and did the whole thing, educated myself.
Mm-hmm.
But you can quit anything.
My beverage is coffee and cigarettes. My thing
well,
is coffee and cigarettes.
I will admit to this. I'm completely addicted to coffee. If I don't have my two cups of coffee in the morning, I'm not nice.
No, I'm not either.
There you go.
So you're a bear only for 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's it. 3 weeks, I was I'm more than a bear. I was kind of psychotic. And then I would say I turned into a bear, and then I turned into, like, an emotional roller coaster because I could start, like, yelling at somebody and then crying. And then the pangs, you know, that thing where I've got to have a cigarette? And that gets further and further and further apart. And so in the same way that an alcoholic quits drinking, which is one day at a time, one drink at a time. So for an alcoholic, don't quit drinking. That's too big. Just don't have the next drink.
Hmm.
Just the next one you're going to have, don't have that one.
Mm-hmm.
And do that every single time. So that next cigarette you're going to have, don't have that one.
Don't have that one? Okay.
All right, just don't have that one. Now, if you do that, you're actually on your own regimen of slowing down your smoking.
Oh, I
maybe
do.
You only
I
smoke every
out.
Other one. You know what I mean? And then you keep going. It's going, I'm not going to have that one.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, I'm not going to open that pack.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know what? I'm going to do something else. I'm going to take the money that I would have spent on that pack and I'll put it in this jar here. And at the end of the month, I'm going to take myself out to dinner.
Very good.
So good luck.
If I can only do it out the first one in the morning, the first thing I think about in the morning.
Then don't do that one. Don't do that one. Change your habit completely. Do something completely different. Like if you always go out to the balcony table and sit down and light your cigarette, don't do that tomorrow.
No.
Do something
completely
different. Grab a cup of coffee and go outside. Mm-hmm. Put a mask on, go outside or whatever. Do something, just change it so it's not routine. Because it's routine that's part of it. The news comes on, have a cigarette. Time to have coffee, have a cigarette. Time to do this, have a cigarette. I'm sitting down in the newspaper, you know? And those are all habitual things. You're not even thinking about it.
No.
And all that's happening is the addiction is just getting more and more of it self-satisfied. More nicotine, more nicotine, more, more. And so you want to go the other direction, right? So break habits. Do something different. And tomorrow morning, go for a walk first.
Okay.
Go
I can't walk.
Go to Starbucks. I
can't stand up.
I am so sorry. So then read the news. What do you do in the morning then that's routine besides the cigarette? Like, what can you do that's different? Can you read a newspaper or a book or
read
a magazine?
Read a newspaper, coffee, and a cigarette.
So then don't have the newspaper tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And just have the coffee. You got to have the coffee. But watch the news. Just do it a different way. And say to yourself, I'm not having the first cigarette. Not until I've had a second cup of coffee. Then when you've had a second cup of coffee, then take the next cigarette. And then the next one after that, don't have that one.
Mm-hmm.
And just see what happens. You might be really, really surprised at the power that you have. And particularly struggling with the disease that you have, which is trying desperately to take away your power. How great to be able to express your own.
Mm-hmm.
And go, I'm going to have power over this addiction. I'm going to have power over my body.
Right. I get stressed about something and put cigarette in my mouth, but I shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. I'll try it in the morning. I'll let you know.
Good luck. Good
Thank
luck.
You. I need it.
Okay. Yeah, we probably just got long enough, but we would love you to come back. And you can also come back for my birthday show on June 12th. I'm just putting it out there. Just putting out there.
Happy birthday. How old are you going to be? 18 years old?
Yeah, well, David is planning a big birthday party on the show on June 12th. So,
lovely. I think that's
everyone. It seems like everyone calling, probably going to call in now that is quarantine. So, in a way, I'm happy with the quarantine because then all my favorite actors can call in. So, I won't complain on that end, but I will complain that I'm tuning more and tuning because I prefer just going back 10 years. So, yeah, but please, yeah, whenever you have something to promote, let David. Oh, I know, because you are one of our favorite guests.
All right. Well, as soon as I can announce the movie, I'll let you know, and then we'll talk about it.
Thank you very much, Scott.
All right.
Okay. Have a good night.
Stay safe, everybody.
Okay. Stay safe, everybody. Bye. Enjoy your son.
You know, I don't even have a good weekend anymore because I feel like every day is a weekend.
There's no sports. There's no sports.
Okay, fine. I'm just saying that the boys are on the show now. I put both of the boys on the
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Carly.
Hey,
Maggie.
Hey, Maggie.
I'm Maggie.
Hi.
Hey, David.
Okay, may I say something, sir?
I just got today the new Soap Opera Digest magazine, and you wouldn't believe who's on the cover, and Maurice Bernard. And
Maggie,
nice story.
I will send you my copy. I will send you my copy once I go get the mail, but someone has to remind me to go downstairs and get the mail.
Oh, sorry. Oh.
Yeah.
Did you get the book yet?
And there was a great interview that he did with the magazine, so.
Wow.
So.
Breathe.
Amazon.
Yeah. But,
I just want to say, number one, Dump taps Robert Kraft supposed leader to advise on reopening the country. Okay, let me say something here. Really? Are you dumb? Really? You gotta ask Robert Kraft, who gave you a ton of money, who doesn't even have Tom Brady anymore, to help you. Are you kidding me? I mean, you care more about being forced on than people's lives? Are you kidding me? I'm sorry, that is the most stupidest thing I've heard today. And everything he's doing is making me angry. Okay, I cannot find one redeeming quality for this son of a bitch, okay? I can't. I never will. And I'm sorry. This person should not even be in office. And thank you to our governor, Zay Inslee, for putting out what he put out today. Washingtonians, we are not going to open up for a while. He has made that perfectly clear. We are not opening up for a long time. Washington, Governor Oregon, California, Chicago, right, maybe?
Right. Illinois isn't. Schools are canceled today.
Yeah, said they all, they are going to work together and decide when to open their states up. It's not for the president to decide. Number one, it's for the governors who's caring about us, who's actually giving us what we need, putting the safety of the country first. Yes, I get it. We are losing economic, we are losing money. I get it. You know, I get that we are probably losing a lot in baseball and football and basketball right now, but
soccer.
Okay, people are dying here, Trump, and you have blood on your hands no matter how someone wants to look at it, someone wants to say he doesn't. He knew about this. He knew about this in January. And we are in April, and we've been quarantined for so long, and he did nothing. So I'm sorry. I'm not going to be one of those people that just says, give this guy a pass. No. I'm sorry. I'm not. I can't. I cannot justify it. So.
I agree, Carly. And our governor in North Carolina isn't helping either with wanting the country back with what's going on, because he wanted everything, because if this guy wanted it back open by May 1st and he's going to get us either sicker than it is. And as I was telling my mom and my brother today, I'm not taking no chances, at least until July 4th, when I know it's going to be really safe, because I'm not taking no chances with Mother's Day, Memorial Day, or my birthday.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I really wait and listen to the science, because they know.
Leg cancer, already here on Memorial Day, like you said, Bobby. And, they canceled the July 4th thing, and they've also canceled the 4th of July. So that's going to tell you something. Okay, yeah, do our governors want us to stay at home for the hell of it? No, they are just trying to protect us. And today it was confirmed that hit the 600 death mark. Okay? I'm sorry. It just angers me. It angers me to a new level every day this guy speaks. And
yeah.
And I know I've been very tense lately. And I know I've probably been a bit. Sorry, David. But, you know, we are doing the best we can, and I want to say sometimes while I'm joking, and just joking, I'm not really meaning what I'm saying. I joke half of the time, right, Maggie?
You just said it as expression. You really did.
Yeah, and that's all I do, but I will pay attention and be more sensitive to people's needs right now, because sometimes I don't think before it comes out of my mouth, it just comes out. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not the one that, you know, practice what I say before it comes out of my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, supposed to think about it first.
Yeah, and...
Well, I hope... I know, Carly, you and Maggie probably could care less about today's flashback GH from January of 2018 that had Ava on there.
Yeah, I saw it today. I watched it.
Oh, yeah, I put it off my Google today. I'm not going to watch the Ava Duran episode. I refuse. No one's going to make me, so I took it off. And,
well, guess what? I'm lucky that my DVR didn't record it, because it's only set to record live shows, not no reruns. So,
David, I mean, Bobby, the thing that all the TVs and DVRs are saying today was new, so I had to take it my off record. So maybe new DVR is different.
Yeah, because it didn't record. Because it didn't record the CBS
show.
The only new show that it recorded was Days of Our Lives. And the CBS soaps were repeats.
Well, I recorded Young and the Restless, And I have a special reason why I recorded that back episode. And maybe probably can say it without thinking.
Picked off.
Is on today.
Excuse me, are you Maggie? No. Yeah. I mean, no, Maggie knows why, but you know that, yeah. I heard Christoph was going to be on. And it's probably going to make me cry, you know, and probably will, you know.
I'm doing a lot of that.
But
I thought I was over at first, but I'm not. Every time I see him now, I cry.
Yeah. Now I have a question. Do you? It seems kind of funny, but do you watch Classic YR at the same time that Heather Tom was Victoria, knowing that our lady would see her in Classic Bowl and Bugle as Kate?
Of course I did.
And of course
you
see,
remember.
And then see Heather Tom later as Kate a half hour later, on Classic Bowl and Bugle.
Well, as you remember, I watched Ryan O. since probably the mid 89. And, you know, I know more than I should because my grandfather was a secret Young and the Restless fan. And, you know, that's one thing I missed because, you know, my mom is into Young and the Restless. And my uncle, who made fun of us all like the washing soaps, is addicted to Boredom Beautiful. He would text me at 3 in the morning asking me stuff. So the men in my family, you know, say they don't watch, but when my dad asked me months back, is Victor really going to die? Is Victor really dead? I'm like, wait a moment. You say you don't watch it? He goes, it's on in the bedroom when your mother's watching. I'm like, and you don't go in the other room? He goes, no. I'm like, then you're all addicted to your father. And after I said that, he had no comment.
Yeah.
You know,
what's going to be kind of funny with Bowling Beautiful and GH in if they keep this the way it is? You're going to be seeing a classic Bowling Beautiful with Scott Clifton at the end, and then you see him from 20 years ago as Dylan on General Hospital. That's what's going to eventually happen sooner or later if they can find a good classic. Especially when they had Ken McEwen as Hope on Bowling Beautiful opposite Scott Clifton, and when they had Georgie and Dylan as a couple on GH during that time, because that's going to probably happen in the next few weeks. I'm not anybody at ABC daytime or CBS daytime that will probably know about that, because it would not surprise me at all if they end up if they run out of new Price is Right shows, if they run classic ones with Bob Barker on it.
I think I'll throw in here. Sky Clifton, I loved him as Dylan on GH. I cannot stand him as Liam. I really have very little tolerance for Dylan the Beautiful. Very little.
I agree.
If I see it, I see it. If I don't, I don't. I don't really care.
Yeah. But it's going to be interesting to see how long this thing happens before we run out of daytime materials, because other than The View, GMA, and Kelly and Ryan, which they can do remotely to do the interviews and without an audience, there's not going to be that much interaction with the acting as far as daytime dramas goes or game shows go for quite a while, unless you go online to play the video game version of it or something.
Okay, you guys, we have 3 shows next week, which I was not aware of until our great PR person told me we have 3 shows. This is fine because I'm not doing anything but looking at the wall. So I'm not mad. It's fine. I'm not mad. Don't worry. I just want to say before we end the show, people, we are like a family on the show. So, of course, sometimes we are going to fight and argue and drive each other crazy. And say things that maybe we should have in the heat of the moment. But, you know, this is a really trying time for the four of us. We've never been in this position before. I mean, and I know it might sound self-seeding to a lot of people when I say I don't remember what Target looks like. I'm actually not kidding. You know, it's like one of my joys of shopping, and it's really not my fault because it started with my grandmother, and Maggie will attest to this, and then my mom, and then they passed it down to my sister and I. So it's the genetic thing. Really not my fault. It's just got passed down to me, right, Maggie?
I know. Well, that's like sports. I was 5 years old with heart trouble, right? And Papa taught me to watch the game, and I watched it, and I got interested in it. Well, from 5 years old on, I am obsessed with sports. I'm the only girl in the family.
Yeah, I love sports,
I'm the only person
I'm
the only person really in my generation of the family that is addicted, and they all think I'm crazy, but I go, oh, I got it from your father and our grandfather.
Yeah, and for me, I love football and basketball and baseball because basically, as a kid, I bonded with my grandfather over that because we would just sit there, and even when I was a baby, he said he would put on the basketball game, and my mom couldn't get me asleep for the life of her. And then she would take me next door because we lived right next to my grandparents, and you know, mom didn't want to wake up grandma, and grandma's like, give me to her. It's fine. We will be fine. And he put on the base. He put on the sports, and he says, I will fall asleep. So it was a perfect remedy. So even when I say I miss shopping, it's just because I love my Target. Okay? And that's, you know.
My friends at my restaurant has everything, and I've been going to Dunkin' Donuts to get some bacon and coffee, and also going to chicken because I started to get back into Chick-fil-A when I ordered some chicken sandwiches from Chick-fil-A, and I've done that. And
I think we're going to end the show on a good note.
On Sunday, so I just say it is what it is.
I think we should
end
the show on a good note because two people on the show are hungry and haven't eaten all day. Okay, maybe three people. Oh, did you eat already, Maggie?
Carl got Jersey. That's why I was going to put a commercial in here. Jersey Mike's. If anybody wants any food that they have, go order it. Because truthfully, all the restaurants and stuff are suffering.
I was listening to Martha Madison's podcast just a couple of days ago, and she brought up how Grubhub been trying to ask people in commercials to help support them and stuff like that.
Because they're starving. I mean, for business.
Right.
And when this ever gets over, God willing, it'd be nice to know that they'll still be around.
But to be careful with some of these delivery places like Grubhub and stuff like that. And so I'm saying we're going through in the restaurant business.
Jersey Mike
did
it. Hopefully.
You paid online.
Good night, everybody.
They just dropped it at the door. You didn't even have to see somebody. They just dropped it. Then they leave, and then you pick it up.
Right. Hopefully.
Yeah, and
hopefully, regardless of when they reopen up the country, and I don't know what phases with restaurants and churches fall into, that at least I can get back to work, because we need with the summer coming, if they make it safe enough to people to travel, and we need the business at a restaurant and stuff like that.
Yeah, but the economy needs to be second, but people order out. I mean, I do every Saturday night, but this order out, I mean, right now we have to help them in that way. We can't go to the restaurants. I don't have a call to go through the drive-thru because, take it from Maggie, the one with me on the boat. Hey, Maggie.
Yeah, enough. I drive a motorized wheelchair. I'm instructive at that, so I'm stationary where I'm at.
Yeah, we both suck. So thank you guys for coming on. And David, when is the next show?
David?
Oh, my God. David left us. David got disconnected. Okay. I will put all the show information. And David will let you know. David probably got sick of us because he was hungry. But I don't blame him. So we will be back next week, guys.
Okay.
See
you next week, guys. Stay safe.
Okay, night, guys.
Night.
Bye.
Night.